KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Time for the Fish Report here on KSDP. Today is June the 17th. We've got numbers reflecting June the 16th, 2025. We got the Alaska harvest summary as well as the escapement summary, which includes the largest single day of sockeye escaped a Porzinski weir by this time in the season in the last 10 years. Starting out with the harvest summary, 13,700 sockeye delivered yesterday across the area for a total of 157,000 to date. For the Chewing Islands, 2,500 fish delivered yesterday for a total of 27,600. No noticeable changes in pink or chum for a total of 4,200 pinks and 5,600 chum. 9,000 sockeye delivered in South Unimak area. They're at 127,000 to date. No significant pink deliveries. 2,000 chum in Unimak for a total of 33,000 to date. And then Nelson Lagoon, off a strong Nelson River escapement, they've had their first day of harvest. They're at 3,200 to date. Looking at the harvest summary for the AK pen, yesterday 1,400 fish up the weir in Chignik. They're at 45,000. Still the strongest post-2017 by quite a number. Nelson River, 3,200 for a total of 11,800 to date, and they are about 10 times ahead of any year in the last 10. 600 in the Bear for a total of 2,700, putting them pretty high up as well post-2017. And then Ilnik had 400 fish go up the weir there. They're at 11,000, and that puts them in mid-range. Again, 84 fish in Orzinski. That is now 84 for the season and well ahead of any year in the last 10. There was 28 by now in 2021. And then 4 up the Iluk River for a total of 15 to date. That does it for the fish report here on KSDP. This report was brought to you by the Aleut Corporation. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up right now on KSDP.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bowles, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes recently received grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports, other housing-related funding for the tribes is a little less certain.
Tribes across the country receive federal support through the annual Indian Housing Block Grant. This year, the Eastern Shoshone Tribe got about $2.3 million, and the Northern Arapaho Tribe received about $3.6 million. Emerie L. LeBeau is the director of the Northern Arapaho Housing Authority.
We get this block grant based on a formula, right? And so it's based off the units and our need.
The money keeps housing authorities operating and helps maintain their current housing. Trump's proposed budget would decrease that funding by about 20%. An earlier draft also called for eliminating a competitive community development grant. Gilbert Ritchie is with the Eastern Shoshone Housing Authority and says losing that would have a direct impact on future projects.
That's the primary funding source for us to spearhead new housing development.
Congress is still in the process of reviewing the budget. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
Last month, President Trump announced plans to reopen and rebuild Alcatraz, one of America's most infamous prisons that was shut down 6 decades ago. For now, it's a federal historic landmark managed by the National Park Service. Several top leaders from the Bureau of Prisons, including engineers, recently toured Alcatraz to conduct site assessments. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the 22-acre island within the San Francisco Bay has strong ties to the Hopi tribe of Arizona.
First a pre-Civil War fort, then a military prison, this maximum security federal penitentiary housed some of the nation's most notorious inmates from Al Capone to George Machine Gun Kelly. But Matthew Sakayestawa, a history professor at the University of Arizona, says they all had one thing in common.
The federal government has always seen that island as a place to put problematic people, including a group of 19 Hopi men.
Some refer to them as the Hopi 19, hailing from the Pueblo village of Oribe, perched atop Third Mesa in the high desert of northern Arizona. The Hopis were charged with sedition after refusing to let their children attend Indian boarding schools. With no due process since they were considered wards of the state, the then Commissioner of Indian Affairs sentenced the Hopi 19 to confinement and hard labor in 1895, nearly 1,000 miles away.
You will encounter steep walkways, uneven surfaces, and tripping hazards on Alcatraz Island. Please watch your step.
Right now, it's a park. This is a place for the public. I've taken the ferry boat trip there, less than 2 miles from the shore, and you can learn about this native history.
Sikai Estawa, who is Hopi, says Alcatraz Island is also a political symbol.
Whether that's federal government's perspective or also from indigenous people.
And for President Donald Trump, Alcatraz is not only a symbol of law and order.
It's a big hulk that's sitting there rusting and rotting, but it sort of represents something that's both horrible and beautiful and strong and miserable, weak.
Tune in tomorrow for part two of the series on Alcatraz's ties to the Hopi. And on this day in 1876, the Battle of the Rosebud took place in eastern Montana between 4,000 Lakota Sioux warriors and General George Crook's troops. He lost 28 out of 1,300 men, but the greater disaster, the Battle of Little Bighorn, was 8 days away. I'm Brian Bull for National Native News.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Skugdash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Om Yen. Support by Arctic Encounter 2025. An Arctic policy and business event July 30th to August 1st that explores community resilience, critical infrastructure, and traditional knowledge. Registration at arcticencounter.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
They don't have no place for us to go, so they want us out of here, we got to go somewhere. So it might be your neighborhood.
Fires are sparked during abatement of Anchorage's largest homeless camp. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 17th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, researchers say paralytic shellfish poisoning toxins caused first seal deaths on St. Paul Island.
First documented marine mammal die-off with saxitoxin as the suspected cause. So that was super important for us to get it out there.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Anchorage city officials began clearing the two largest homeless encampments today. They say they've been working for 6 months to plan the abatement. But as Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, many of the campers at Davis Park and the nearby snow dump weren't ready to leave.
Brian Vaughn reads the signs, leaning up against a barricade of bike parts, scrap metal and furniture, and old shopping carts.
And then the one we made up last night, coming to a neighborhood near you.
He's been living at the snow dump encampment in the Mountain View neighborhood for 3 years, and he doesn't want to leave.
They don't have no place for us to go, so they want us out of here, we got to go somewhere. So it might be your neighborhood.
The mayor's team says it's been planning today's abatement for about 6 months, and the campers here have known about it for weeks. It's taken longer than most abatements because the two adjoined camps are the largest in the city. The mayor's office estimates that until recently, about 100 people lived in the area. By this morning, a few dozen remained. and some parts of the day went as city officials planned. Officers walked through the tents. They told people they had 20 minutes to leave. Outreach workers encouraged them to go into shelter or offered services like rehab. Then, some parts of the day did not go as planned. 5 fires were ignited during the clearing, black plumes of smoke shooting into the sky, propane tanks popping. Firefighters responded quickly and said no one was injured. Fire Chief Doug Schrage says his department prepared for something like this.
Yeah, I think it would be an expected act of rebellion. These people are, you know, being forced away from their encampments, and appropriately so. And it's not surprising that somebody would act out this way.
Karina Brown with the mayor's office calls the fires unacceptable.
I'm very disappointed that this was the exclamation point for some folks, which was to set fires, but that reinforces why this was incredibly necessary to do, that mentality that if we can't be here, then we're going to burn it down, and it's a public space.
But many people also leave quietly from the encampment space. A woman neatly folds her clothes on the sidewalk, another sorts possessions on a tarp. Jordan and his girlfriend Myra decide to take 2 of the 20 shelter beds the city reserved for the campers. The decision was last minute, but he's on crutches with an infection in his back that's making it hard for him to walk.
I mean, I don't have no choice. I don't have anywhere else to go right now, so I'm kind of being forced to do it now. So
others, though, don't know where they're going. Angie Carter says she hasn't heard from any outreach teams about shelter beds. She'd love one.
Where? Is the question is where? We don't even know where. They move us, but don't tell us where we can go.
As the smoke clears and the camp empties, Brian Vaughn is still there. He lingers by the edge of the snow dump. He still hasn't packed up. He doesn't know where he's going, but he doesn't want to talk about that. He's too mad about the fires.
I'm just upset that they lit everything on fire. I just can't believe these guys. In 2 seconds, it makes us look so stupid.
He watches as some of his friends haul their belongings across the street, away from the camp.
I'm not sure what I'm doing. Larry's daughter's picking him up, taking him home. Lou's daughter's taking her home. And they gave her 5 minutes to go back in and take what she really wanted out of the tent.
The mayor's office says it's guessing it'll take about 3 weeks to clean up the camp. They can't be sure. The area will be closed during cleanup. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
The field of candidates for Alaska governor grew to 4 last week. That's after Matanuska-Susitna Borough Mayor Edna DeVries filed a letter of intent saying she's considering a run for governor. The letter allows her to start raising money for her campaign. DeVries, a Republican, says she's 90 to 95% sure she'll file to actually run. DeVries turns 84 next month. She was a state senator in the mid-1980s and more recently served as the mayor of Palmer. She's been mayor of the Matsu Borough since 2021. In an interview last week, DeVries said she believes in limited government and is a supporter of large permanent fund dividends in line with a decades-old formula.
The state has to live within its means, and I know that's going to be shrinking probably the size of government that we have in the state of Alaska.
Paying a full statutory dividend would require drastic cuts to state services or raising vast amounts of new revenue. Lawmakers haven't approved a formula dividend since oil prices crashed in the mid-2010s and started relying on the permanent fund to pay for state services. DeVries also echoes some of Dunleavy's priorities when it comes to education. She says she's proud of the work her borough has done expanding charter schools in the Matsu, and she says she wants to see schools held accountable for poor performance.
I think that's the biggest decision right there is how do we continue to fund but also get the accountability and the results that we want.
DeVries says she's been a, quote, Trumper since President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. Like the president, she says she'd like to expand resource development in the state. DeVries joins an all-Republican field for the 2026 governor's race. Candidates include Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, former Senator Click Bishop, and businesswoman Bernadette Wilson. Meanwhile, researchers say for the first time they've linked seal deaths in the Bering Sea to the same toxins that cause paralytic shellfish poisoning. The findings were published last month in the journal Marine Mammal Science. Last summer, about 10 dead fur seals washed up on a beach on St. Paul Island, a small community in the middle of the Bering Sea. Tribal staff from the Aleut community of St. Paul Island recovered the fur seals, froze the carcasses, and sent tissue samples to a lab that monitors algal blooms nationally. Lauren Devine runs the tribe's ecosystem conservation office and is one of the article's authors. She says the results were clear. The seals had been poisoned by a neurotoxin tied to warming waters.
It paralyzes the body. It likely caused them to just suffocate, not even drown, but they're just stop their lungs from working, stop all of their systems from working, and totally paralyze them.
The toxin is called saxitoxin, well known in shellfish, but undocumented in Alaska seal populations.
This is, in fact, the first documented marine mammal die-off with saxitoxin as the suspected cause. And so that was super important for us to get it out there and get everyone aware of it.
Saxitoxin is produced by harmful algal blooms, colonies of algae that can form when ocean waters warm. The yearly blooms are part of a normal cycle in the Bering Sea, but climate change is making them more frequent and more dangerous.
We're seeing this really just stark warming every year without any type of resetting it back to cold. And so seeing toxic algal blooms and toxic phytoplankton as often as we are is something that is really alarming.
Fur seal is an important subsistence food for St. Paul, but so far there's no sign of risk to the community. It's because people only harvest young males, and those animals haven't shown signs of exposure. The seals affected were mostly females and pups, which feed more actively at sea. The tribe is monitoring closely. As of now, Devine says the fur seal harvest is safe for the upcoming subsistence season. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, one Petersburg resident has an unexpected visitor drop in for breakfast.
I walked around the corner and saw a bird, an eagle, full-grown eagle, in my house.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It doesn't matter what you were wearing, what you were drinking, or what you agreed to in the past. Sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through multiple resources. Visit notaloneak.org to find help for yourself or a loved one. Remember, it's not your fault. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Alaska wildlife troopers and other emergency personnel rescued a pilot Friday who'd sustained serious injuries when he crashed a single-engine airplane just off Chena Hot Springs Road. Alaska state troopers say they got a call from the pilot at around 4:30 p.m. Friday, reporting that he'd crashed his plane near milepost 19 near Two Rivers. According to a trooper dispatch, the pilot said he was injured and that fuel was leaking from the Piper PA-12 supercruiser that crashed. Troopers and State Parks law enforcement officers responded, along with emergency service personnel from Steese Fire and North Star Fire Departments. They removed the pilot and transported him to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital in serious condition. The report didn't name the pilot or describe the injuries he sustained. A trooper spokesperson didn't respond to questions Sunday. Troopers notified the Federal Aviation Administration and the National Transportation Safety Board about the crash. Meanwhile, the special election to determine whether or not to form the Hoonah Borough will be paused until further notice. That's after a Superior Court judge granted a stay of a state commission's approval of the proposed borough in Southeast Alaska. KTOO's Clarice Larson has more.
The order filed on Friday halts a special election scheduled for this July. Residents within the proposed boundary would have voted on creating Alaska's 20th borough. Ballots were supposed to be sent to registered voters by next week for the July 15th election. But in April, the communities of Tenneke Springs, Pelican, Gustavus, and Elfin Cove filed an appeal of the commission's decision and a motion to stay. That's what a judge granted this week. The state's local boundary commission originally approved the city of Hoonah's request to form a borough late last year. The city has tried multiple times over the last three decades to form a borough, but this is the first time it would have gone to voters. The proposal involves the city of Hoonah dissolving its city government to add more than 10,000 square miles of nearby unincorporated land and water, including Glacier Bay, Chichikov Island, and more, to form one unified regional government. Pelican Mayor Patricia Phillips says her community opposed the creation of the borough because it would isolate communities like hers that aren't included in the proposed boundaries.
It would block us off from one another and reduce the amount of opportunities, and we want our opinions heard. And so if that means going to the Superior Court for our voices to be heard, then that's what it takes.
Huna City Administrator Dennis Gray Jr. did not respond to a request for comment about the recent stay motion. But in an interview in late May, he says forming a borough would give residents more say in the future development of the region. And he was undeterred by the appeal.
Our case is correct and they're wrong with their appeal, so we're going to be fine.
The judge's order on Friday halts the local boundary commission from taking any more steps while the appeal is pending. It is unclear how long the appeal process will take. A spokesperson for the State Division of Elections says no ballots were sent to voters prior to the motion. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
The National Weather Service issued Juneau's first recorded severe thunderstorm warning yesterday afternoon after conditions escalated and a cruise ship partially broke free from its moorings. It was a sunny afternoon until the sky abruptly darkened. Heavy rain came down and winds gusted up to 60 miles per hour. Brian Besnick, lead meteorologist at the Juneau NWS office, says the office was aware that the storm was traveling north through the Panhandle early yesterday morning, but by the time it reached Juneau, the storm's force surprised him.
We were issuing marine statements for thunderstorms in the interchannel, so we were tracking those. The intensity was not something we had any larger indications that they were that strong.
Besnick says Juneau typically has a thunderstorm once every 2 years. They're uncommon in the area because thunderstorms need heat to fuel them and space to grow in the atmosphere. Juneau's high latitude and nearby ice field prevent storm clouds from growing tall and heating up. A cruise ship docked downtown, broke free of its mooring, and drifted into the Gastineau Channel at the height of the storm. Residents shared videos of the Celebrity Edge's escape on social media. Matt Cresswell, the city's harbor master, responded to the incident. He said the wind speed was too much for the lines that tied the ship to the dock and some broke free. He said cruise ship staff then fully untied the vessel to prevent damage to the dock.
This was the perfect, literally the perfect storm with the direction of the wind hitting the ship broadside at its moorings and exceeding the capacity that the lines were made to handle.
He says the ship was able to dock again once the winds died down and there was no damage to the infrastructure. Residents reported downed trees and hail from Douglas to the Mendenhall Valley. There were no reported injuries from the event. While millions across the country were rallying on June 14th for No King's Day, protesting President Donald Trump's policies, Ketchikan held a Unity for Community Fest. It was the first annual event that was promoted as a celebration of the American flag holiday in an effort to bring the community together rather than divide it. KRBD's Maria Dudzek stopped by and has this story.
Hundreds of small American flags placed several feet apart outlined Ketchikan's Alder Park. While kids played games or enjoyed a bouncy house, adults relaxed and socialized, and volunteers grilled hot dogs and hamburgers while music played in the background. It was a relaxed picnic atmosphere on a beautiful sunny day, with people casually coming and going. Darlene D. Svensson is one of the organizers. She says the event's purpose is to celebrate Flag Day and bring people of all opinions together.
We are all Americans before we're anything else, and we've just chosen to celebrate being Americans.
Along Bryant Street, adjacent to the park, other flags flew on flagpoles. These included an Alaska state flag, Trump 2024 flag, an upside-down Knights Templar flag, and a flag that read, "God, Guns, and Guts Made America, Let's Keep All Three." Asked about the flags, DeSvensson said the event was not political.
Ketchikan Patriot, as far as we are concerned, is whomever you are. Some people believe in Trump, some people believe in something different. What you didn't notice is the very first flag of the United States of America, an appeal to heaven. You also will notice one of the Old Glory 13 flags, Betsy Ross. So it's the history of America and where we are.
Attendees were invited to sign a ballot petition to repeal Alaska's ranked choice voting system and a second petition in support of an indoor shooting range in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. One of the attendees was Kathleen Yar.
I've heard that there are divisions within our community, and so I wanted to come out and say that our community is fine and we're going to be fine. We need to have unity.
Willard Jackson Sr. is a Vietnam vet who lives next door to the park. He says he enjoys attending events at the park.
I came to come over and have a free hot dog and talk to some of my veteran friends.
Jackson said he was looking forward to the U.S. Army's 250th anniversary parade later that evening in Washington, D.C. Door prizes donated by local businesses were given out throughout the afternoon. DeSvensson says this is the first of what is planned to be an annual event. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
This year's fire season started slowly due to cool and rainy weather, but it roared to life last week with near record heat and red flag warnings in effect around the interior and elsewhere in the state.
As of Monday afternoon, we've had 13 new fires in the last 24 hours. Statewide, 118 fires have burned 3,100 acres.
Alaska Fire Service spokesperson Beth Ipson says thunderstorms forecast for much of the interior this week likely won't bring much rain. Instead, the agency is bracing for more fires.
We could get some dry lightning later on in the week in kind of the northern, central, eastern part of the state.
Ipson said more than 1,000 lightning strikes were recorded statewide on Sunday and again on Monday. Ipson said more personnel and equipment are on the way to Alaska to help fight a potential outbreak of lightning-caused wildfires.
Within the next couple of days, we'll have 32 additional smoke jumpers up here helping out. We are also getting additional water scoopers in the next few days. And as this forecast of hot, dry, and lightning continues, we are looking to get even more resources up here to help out.
The state's biggest blaze is the Oskowalik Fire in southwest Alaska. State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection spokesperson Sam Harrell said Monday afternoon that it had burned about 1,500 acres and is only about 5% contained. He says the National Weather Service issued a red flag warning for the region on Monday evening. There also are red flag warnings in effect throughout the eastern and central interior, along with a heat advisory for Fairbanks and areas east and west of the city.
Right now, we're extremely dry in the interior. The burn permits are suspended in Fairbanks, Delta, and Tok, just due to these very warm and very dry conditions that we're experiencing. People really need to be careful because it's going to be very easy to spark a new fire.
Those conditions are unlikely to improve much until rain sets in around the interior. For a few weeks in February, Safety Roadhouse hosts Iditarod mushers making their way to Nome. The roadhouse is closed until May when it takes on a new life as a summer hangout spot steeped in Iditarod history. KNOM's Ben Townsend drove out to the iconic final checkpoint of the Iditarod Trail for an evening honoring a special mushing family.
Maybe 4 feet behind Mackie. Here comes Dick Mackie, Rick Swenson. They're all running in. They look tired. Mackie's running. Oh, my God.
The Mackie family entered the Iditarod history books in 1978 when Dick Mackie beat out Rick Swenson by a mere second to claim the title.
Lead dog across first. The race marshal says that makes it Mackie.
5 years later, it was his son Rick's turn to be champion.
What's it take to win an Iditarod?
Lots of hard work. That's the main thing. And good dogs.
Fast forward a few decades, it was Lance's turn.
From safety right now, this is his hardcore team.
Between 2007 and 2010, Lance Mackie won it 4 times in a row.
Lance Mackie, your 2008 Iditarod Sled Dog Race champion.
While the iconic sled dog race has taken many routes over the years, every musher and every Mackie makes one final stop at Safety Roadhouse before the final 20 miles to Nome. During the race in March, the roadhouse is all Iditarod. But from May to September, Safety Roadhouse transforms into a fabled summer hangout. At the helm this summer is 16-time Iditarod veteran Hugh Neff.
Basically, all the bartenders of Nome have been egging me on to do this. So I got my TAPS card to be a bartender just 2 weeks ago. And I've been doing it for a week, and it's been fun. It's a job, I guess, but I'm actually having fun hanging out with people, too.
Neff's first encounter with the Mackies came in the 80s.
I'm in Chistochina and meet this guy named Jason Mackey and this other skinny guy walking back and forth, sort of talking to himself, and that was Lance Mackey.
Neff says he's spent tens of thousands of miles with Lance between the Iditarod, Yukon Quest, and Kobuk 440. He says that time gave him a unique perspective on the veteran musher.
I don't think people realize how much of Lance's spirit was just huger than any other dog musher by far. It was a combination of all the dogginess of that family and one person.
After a second run-in with cancer, Lance died in 2022.
The main thing he taught me was, and a lot of us, was that just because you go through difficult times, you can either choose to say why me, or you can say there's a reason why this might be happening to me and I'm going to make the best of it. He was something else.
So tonight at Safety Roadhouse, it's a celebration of the Mackies. Iditarod edition newspapers featuring their faces are pinned to the walls, a subtle tribute to a mushing family as iconic as the roadhouse itself.
On Front Street once again.
In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
An eagle made an unexpected visit to a Petersburg home earlier this month. It didn't end well for the eagle, but as KFSK's Taylor Heckert reports, luckily, these visits are rare.
Terry Tolan was making breakfast in her kitchen when she heard a loud crash from her living room.
I've never heard anything like that. Just glass, and the first thought was, what on earth could be falling that made that big of a noise?
She went to investigate.
I walked around the corner and saw a bird, an eagle, full-grown eagle, in my house.
The eagle was hopping around like it was trying to find a way out. Tolan was used to seeing eagles fly around her house, which is surrounded by big evergreen trees. But they'd never come inside before. The eagle crashed through a closed, double-paned window on the second story of her home.
He was coming fast. There was a fish that he had dropped midway through the room.
A big orange rockfish was now in Tolan's living room, along with lots of shattered glass and an eagle.
I couldn't walk out because there was glass all over the place. And so I just started screaming for my husband. And I guess there was a lot of noise with eagles outside and he couldn't really hear me.
Once Tolan's husband came inside, they were able to get the eagle to move to their back porch. They called the police. Unfortunately, the eagle died shortly after. Tolan says she feels sad that the eagle didn't make it, but it was lucky nobody was in the living room.
One thing is that I was thinking was how fortunate we are that no one was sitting on the couch, because those shards of glass just came blasting through, and it was a dangerous situation if somebody would have been in there.
An eagle crashing through your window is a pretty rare occurrence in Alaska. Jennifer Cedarleaf is the avian director at the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka. They rehabilitate injured birds, mostly bald eagles.
So I've worked here 30 years, and in that 30 years, I think we've had 3 eagles that went through windows, then maybe 2 or 3 that just hit the window and didn't go through the window. But yeah, it's not a really common thing.
Cedarleaf says that in the few crashes she's seen, usually the eagle has a fish with them, just like the eagle that crashed into Tolan's house.
Eagles are big scavengers, and they don't like to put a lot of effort into hunting, but they will put a lot of effort into chasing another eagle that already has a piece of fish in its talons. So when they're chasing each other, they tend to not pay attention to where they're going, and a lot of times that's when it happens, that they'll hit the window.
Sometimes eagles survive these crashes, and sometimes they don't. Cedarleaf says that it depends on how hard the eagle hits a window. Eagles are big animals. Males can be up to 10 pounds, while females can be up to 14 pounds. There are a lot of products that homeowners can put up in their windows to make it more likely for birds to see them. but Cedarleaf says those products are mostly for smaller birds. If an eagle isn't looking where it's going, she says making your windows easier to see probably won't help. Since these kinds of crashes are rare, Cedarleaf says that homeowners shouldn't be too concerned about having unexpected eagles come visit. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Hannah Floor in Anchorage, Eric Stone and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Theo Greenland on Alaska, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, Ben Townsend in Nome, and Taylor Heckert in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
Wait a minute. They can't shrink me.
I'm miniaturized. I can shrink anything.
But I don't want to be miniaturized.
It's just for an hour.
Not even for a minute.
Quite simple to operate.
No, actually it is, although the controls are highly sophisticated. Look here. There's a button and a switch for everything.
ask for that. I wouldn't ask for any change in plans. Am I ever right when you're such a brat? I feel much better in your hands. Try to take your word, I wanna take you down. You never caught me lying. I'm trying not to shout, wanna work it out. I've been so long denying. Left to cry, and I'm finally learning you can't be too strong. I'm an old time. When you understand there's no one truth, and we're 3,000 miles apart. Try and act your age and your flaming youth. You seek the end but never stop. If I'm a man, do I have the strength to change what I'm becoming? I've been such a fool, didn't wanna lose. It's been a long time coming. I'm a long time gone, keeping your secrets for too long. Maybe you ain't half of what you used to be. In this dim October sky, I've got no more tears left to cry.
Your hair was down, your eyes were red. No comb, I touched your hair. I said, give. the best that I can.
Like a ship out on the sea, I'm drifting and drifting, just like a ship out on the sea. Well, I ain't got nobody in this world to care for me. Yeah,
If my baby would only take me back again. If my baby would only take me back again. I would feel much better, darling, and at least I'd have a friend. Can I do? Give y'all my money. Tell me what more can I do? You is a sweet little girl, but I swear you won't be true. I'm drifting and drifting, just like a ship out on the sea. I'm drifting and drifting, just like a ship out on the sea. Because I ain't got nobody in this world to care for me.